Hi, welcome to the Whole Therapist Podcast. We're leaving out the theorizing and exploring this strange phenomenon of being a human and a therapist. I'm Kelly, licensed marriage and family therapist, working in private practice settings as a clinician and a clinical supervisor in the Denver metro area.
And I'm Abby. I'm a licensed clinical social worker and the owner of a group practice in the Denver metro area. Kelly and I are both registered play therapists, supervisors, and EMDR certified. So we're both therapists, but this is not therapy. And we're both supervisors, but this is not supervision. This podcast is purely for fun. So for any ethical concerns on your caseload, please refer to your state laws and licensing boards.
And please remember to follow The Whole Therapist on Instagram, Facebook, and subscribe on your favorite podcast listening station. For more resources, blogs, and consultation opportunities, visit wholetherapistinstitute.com.
So come join our conversation while we explore the embodied experience of neuroscience and authenticity in the therapy room.
Hi, welcome to the Whole Therapist Podcast. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Abby.
Welcome to the show today. We are here wanting to talk about risk and bravery. Just as we started to press record, you know, we have some ideas about what we want to talk about, but all of a sudden I was flooded. I was like, oh, there's so many things that we do in the therapy space and as humans to take risk and be brave.
Yeah. I think we can just jump in to start talking about bravery. Maybe why do we need to talk about this? And what does it mean to be brave to you in the therapy space?
Yeah, I have certainly one example that I wanted to first start with. And then, like I said, as we press record, I was like, oh, I've got something else I'm thinking about. There is a supervisor that I work with at a practice that I supervise at. Her name is Dr. Melody Brown. And some things that she says often when she's working with clients is, okay, like I feel some sadness in the room. Whose is it? And to me, that's a risk to say it that way. It feels brave to say that instead of, you know, the language I take is, oh, I'm feeling this sadness. But to ask out loud, like, whose is this? Feels like I would be taking a risk if I said that versus maybe just trusting that when I say that, then somebody can like resonate and say, yeah, I feel that too. So I think as we talk about this, risk and bravery are going to feel so different for all of us. I know Dr. Melody Brown is not here now, but I have to believe that for her, it doesn't feel like she's like risk-taking in that moment. I'm sure there's lots of other things that she feels risk-taking, but so just holding that for listeners.
Yeah.
The examples we gave may not feel like risk-taking to you. And just because we give something and we are taking risk and it feels risky to you doesn't mean that we're asking that you push towards that risk if it feels dysregulating.
Because that's a big piece with being brave and risk is we have to be regulated enough to stay with the discomfort, to stay with it. If you're taking a risk and you're totally dysregulated, I'd imagine there's no more nervous system in the room to hold the client with what's about to happen next. So it's like that. I have that image of like one step in dysregulation, one step in regulation, like a blended state.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
For me, when I'm taking risks, it shows up when I'm doing work with parents when they are separated or divorced and I'm working with them together. There are certain questions or approaches that I take that feel risky. And then doing family therapy often comes up and there can be ways that you have to lean into the system and it feels risky. And I've left being like, wow, that was really brave that I did that. You know, so, you know, an example that I think comes up in so many family sessions are the dynamics will show up in your space. So, for example, let's say that a family is trying to have a conversation around something that occurred in the system, and you've got one person who's not directly saying what happened, and you may have a sense of what that person is saying, but you know that out loud, they're not saying it to protect one or multiple family members. Mm-hmm. You have to decide, do you call that out? Do you take the risk and call that out? Because is that going to move the system along or the session along? Or do you continue holding on to that and wait later on in the session or not at all? And then you have folks maybe in the system who, because somebody's not being direct, they're sharing like, I feel really confused. And then there's a shutdown response and they're wanting to retreat. And I think what has shown up for me is that when clients want to retreat, I will say in my earlier career, when clients wanted to retreat, I would retreat with them.
So easy to collude with that, right? Yeah. Like, oh, good. We just both won't go there.
Yeah.
None of us will go.
Yeah. It feels really good to be like, yeah, you're right. We should just keep talking about something else and moving on. So for me, I think the retreating is a piece of like not allowing them to retreat or not allowing yourself to retreat with them.
Yeah.
Or asking permission, right? So then you can say like, is this what shows up at home? Would you normally go somewhere separate? Would you retreat from this conversation?
Yeah.
I think just naming that out loud, which I feel is very IPMB, we're naming like the experience out loud so that we can regulate. Hopefully the system is able to say, yes, this is what happens. If they say no, I mean, that's a whole other
information.
Totally. Just really well guarded.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean that the risk went, it didn't just disappear. The risk still means something.
Yes.
The bravery to name what is happening.
Absolutely.
And then you're met with like the guardedness. Yeah.
Yes. Sure.
And then we're just there with that dynamic.
Yep.
Right. So we keep unfolding as we go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that. Mm-hmm. And then what helps in that moment for me then is saying, asking permission. Are you okay if we actually stay with this, since this will be something different than what you normally do?
Yes.
Or do you trust me to hold this for all of us just a little bit longer? And what I notice is that when I ask permission, all of a sudden I get much more regulated, where it feels very risky to begin with. But once they give the permission, then it feels really good. And then you might say, it seems like you are not saying something direct because you're wanting to protect somebody in here. Right. Then you can name some of those things out loud because you've asked somebody, you've asked the system for permission to go there. And I wonder, in a sense, if you've also then given them permission to go there by asking for permission.
I was just thinking that about like the mutuality in consent, like asking and giving. Now we all have more permission because we've named it.
Yes.
I think it's so important to be with this piece of consent. Like are all, so as a therapist in the room, or as a podcaster, for example, not all parts of me really consented to doing this. So then when I heard us on whatever, Spotify, it was really stressful to other parts of me that did not consent to the risk of being seen or heard or whatever. And so I think in the therapy space, as you take risks to name what's feeling unnameable to a family system, or to share something, like check in with yourself of, okay, parts of me may not consent to this, and I'll take care of that little person in my own time, but therapist me. And you could name that with clients. Like I have said, it feels risky to ask XYZ, does this part of you consent? If there's another part that has questions, can we be with that first? Or like slowing it down and parsing out who's saying yes.
Yes.
To being brave.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
It does. I'm thinking about a story that somebody else had shared with me where a therapist had asked a client a question, and however the client presented in their answer, the therapist said, was that okay that I asked? And the client said, it's fine. And the therapist said, well, don't say it's fine if it's not fine. I think that's even a risk to just say that out loud, to let a client. I mean, there's so many different ways you could say that, but we're essentially calling somebody out. And so you have to decide in your approach, how do we kind of call out some of these things, whether it's with an individual or a family or co-parents?
It's making me think of this line. I'd love to read a poem that Marshall sent out a few weeks ago about risk. And there's a line in there about how risk tells the truth.
I love that.
Yes. And it's so in aligned with what we're talking about. Like one example of a risk we take in the therapy space is naming, to have a voice at all, and not collude with retreating or pretending. So you can go to Marshall's website and find more. I believe he has more works that he's written on there.
Yeah. Or if you're not signed up for his emails, you can just get these right to your inbox.
And it's been such a sweet, I've sat with this with a few consultees, some of the lines in here, and encourage you to go sign up for his email list or find him on his website, marshalllyles.com. But this is called Risk. My ancestors taught me to be an early riser, even as a kid. eyes would pop open and smile crept in because it was silent. It was the only time my frenzied childhood home was quiet. In the stillness, no one could shut down a dream or redirect an outrageous plan. In the quiet, risk could be befriended because others' fear didn't interfere. In the quiet, I could sense risk in my courage spot. Past and future shared a bowl of cereal, and ancestors felt alive as they would whisper intuition and give permission to instincts. Risk and I played in the mornings, and my nerves danced with delight. Risk taught me art. Risk inspired discovery. Risk told me the truth. In the quiet, risk began to shape the ancestor I would one day become, making my spirit ready to meet a future early riser right in their courage spot.
There's one line I'd love to go back to, but I want to echo what you're talking about with the risk tells me the truth. I'm thinking that any time I have taken a risk, it's hard to say any time, but in this moment, as I think about the times I've taken a risk in the therapy space, I have walked away being like, the truth is I'm a really good therapist, right? When I heard you say risk is telling the truth, and I was thinking about examples of risk taking and it's gone well, it's been like, oh, that is exactly what they needed and what I needed. And I did a really good job. The risk has allowed me in this space to acknowledge the work that I'm doing. Because I think in our field, there's often this feast or famine, and we can very quickly go down this road that we are not doing good work or we're not good therapists.
Yeah, that's so true. Like how risk accompanies you after the session as we sit with it.
Yeah.
I love the line. Well, I love so much of this, but how past and future share a bowl of cereal.
Yes.
And that risk whispers intuition. I think that any time in the therapy space, for example, that I notice an opportunity to be brave or take a risk, it is a whisper. It's typically not some jarring. There's like a kindness or like a wooing from risk. Like
yeah.
Whispering to intuition and giving permission to instinct. I just love that one.
I absolutely agree with that because yes. I think there's a piece that I hear that says, just lean in.
Yeah.
And that, yeah. I think that is risk whispering. Can I see that there's a line that I also like yeah. loved at the beginning?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's two other lines. In the quiet, risk could be befriended.
Yeah.
I think that's something to think about too, is back to being regulated. Internally, we really need to have a quieting so that we can take the risk.
Yeah, in the stillness. He says, in the stillness, yeah. in the stillness. That's so true. Yeah.
Yes. So know that, of course, if we're activated, our nervous system is not going to say, let's take more risk. It is going to retreat, fight or flight, or it's going to shut down, which I guess could be also retreat. So knowing that we really need to be able to just check in internally. What is our internal landscape? Does it feel quiet enough that we can move towards the risk? And then the other line that I really liked, it said, because others' fear didn't interfere.
Yeah.
I think that still goes with some of the quieting.
Yeah. There's so much pressure from licensing boards and the culture of being a therapist and the branding of like the therapist ways in private practice, at least, that I think it can cause such a fear-based response, how we show up with a client, like, mm-hmm. oh, I don't want to do this wrong.
Yes. I don't want a bad review.
Yeah, I want to do this right. Mm-hmm. The ways we collude with the harm that a lot of the systems of our field cause, it's risky to depart from that.
Yes.
It's risky to be here on the podcast talking at all.
Yeah.
About two-person psychology and relational neuroscience. We're really just talking about humaning. That's risky in a field that privileges the DSM diagnoses and CBT. And we're not saying those are bad, but holding the both and of like anytime something's about to unfold into something new, there's a risk, I imagine. Is that true?
Yes, absolutely.
Change always requires risk.
Yes.
And so we could invite that or... Oh, I read something really beautiful yesterday. It said, we could invite risk, or there's this line, I'll find where it's from. The author talks about reveling in vitality instead of trying to rein life in. Like revel and joining in what risk can bring, the next unknown thing, versus trying to tame your practice.
Yeah, it's making me feel a little bit of grief because I'm thinking about my intern self and even my pre-licensed self. And I, intervention-wise, was much more willing to like just try it all.
Yeah.
And I find myself sometimes being less creative or less willing to try new things. I'm not sure why I was willing to maybe take more risk before. And it could be just that feedback loop of the times that I did take risk, maybe they didn't go as well as I had thought. And so it just continues to, I don't know, maybe create like a callus.
Yeah. I'm so curious about that. Cause it's like the longer I'm in the field, the more humble I feel.
Yes.
About how much I do not know.
Yes.
And how much we have to hold uncertainty. Who knows what people need, right?
Right.
I'm just here with them kind of thing. So in that way I don't, but holding that uncertainty could be regulated or fear-based. Like, oh gosh, I don't know what's coming next, or I don't know what to do. So now I'm not going to take the risk versus like the joy in it. Right.
Yeah. And maybe it's, my risks are just different now.
Yeah.
The example that was in my head, I was thinking I had worked a very long time ago with a group of parents. It was, you know, maybe like a biological parent and one step parent. And they came in for a parenting session and I made them all play with Legos. And had them create different things and like have the conversation that way so that we could avoid this huge blow up in the session, which may have been useful in, you know, future sessions. But in that session, we need to get work done. And now I just can't imagine engaging too many of the parents that I work with Legos. I don't know though if that's maybe risky or just reading my clients.
I have no idea. Yeah. It could be less connection to risk, or maybe you have so many more tools to be with people. You don't need the tactile directive, perhaps. Like,
yeah, that's a good point.
Very attuned to what parents are feeling and where they are.
And I actually probably feel more regulated if conflict shows up. I'm like, all right, well, yeah, here we go.
Yeah, it's so true. I think it's risky to trust that we don't have to know what comes next. So much of my own aversion to any risk is like, oh, it's uncertain though. And how afraid. I don't feel very brave a lot of the time. It has always served me when I do get brave in my personal and professional life, but being able to hold, like, I don't know what's coming next anyway, whether I take the risk or not.
Yeah.
Has been a new thing for me. Like, you actually don't know. It's an illusion. You can do a protocol, for example, or I can like do the same thing with supervisees that we always do, but I still don't know what's going to happen.
I love that. I think that's a great line. You don't know what's going to happen, whether you take the risk or not.
Yeah. I have this poem. I won't read the whole thing, but we could put it on social media or send a link to the anthology that it's found in. But I wanted to offer it to listeners because there's a few lines in here that make me think about the advice to ourselves. The poem is called Advice to Myself. And I think about therapists, and as we hold risk and be brave and try new things, it's like the opposite of rigidity or constriction. She says, don't keep all the pieces of the puzzles or the doll's tiny shoes in pairs. Don't worry who uses whose toothbrush or if anything matches at all. Accept one word to another or a thought. Pursue the authentic. Decide first what's authentic and go after it with all your heart. Your heart, that place you would never think of cleaning out. Authenticity, I think risk holds hands with authenticity. And so we could throw out the matching pairs of the rigidity and kind of go with the uncertainty in a joyful way. That's what I'd invite people to be curious about.
Yeah. I love the vision of holding hands. Yeah. So hopefully we can just leave you with that today is, can your authentic part start to think about when it wants to hold hands with risk in one of your next upcoming therapy sessions?
Thanks for being with us.